Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Did you know that there are more miles of trails in America than highways? And the trails are becoming one of the hottest features of America's finest new home communities? Or the trails are now being incorporated for their healthful path to good health and mind? They've come a long way, and so have we on this journey together, people and trails. Continue when we return here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
We hear each day about the loss of open space, and yet Americans, by a vast majority, really value nature. And now, we see that getting out for recreation, inspiration, and health are a new trend in a balanced life. So America's turning to trails right through their cities and towns. They want them, and they want them now. It hasn't always been that way, and that's part of the trail story. But trails don't just spring up, they are complex creations. So we turn our attention now to Bob Searns. He's the vice chair of American Trails, who's been making trails for over 30 years. And Bob, it's great to have you on the Wildside News.
Great to be here.
Thanks. Bob, you've managed to make trails the central theme of your life. How did this begin for you personally?
I think it actually began when I was a teenager. I was a camp guide, a canoe trip guide up in Algonquin Park. It's a wilderness area about the size of Connecticut up north of Toronto in Ontario. And I used to guide canoe trips into wilderness areas and really got struck with being away, being in places where no automobiles were allowed. The only way you got around was with your paddle or over the portages when you portage from lake to lake, and the water was so clean you could drink out of it. And I think those experiences when I was 17 years old just left an impression on me and kind of set a direction.
Those things set a standard that's hard to find in sort of contemporary technological life.
Exactly.
You know, now you started out with some trails that people are actually very familiar with quite a while ago, which have become very serious parts of communities. Why don't you talk about some of your early experiences in trail development?
Well, my first experience, the first job I had was in Buffalo, New York, and I was asked to take a look at the Niagara River and leading up to Niagara Falls and providing a way for people to move along that corridor on foot and on bicycle, and worked on that for a couple of years, beginning to put together that notion.
How long ago was that, Bob?
Oh, gosh.
Go ahead.
Over 30 years ago.
Well, there you go, see?
Yeah. And that actually led to my relocating in Denver. I originally went out to support my ski habit and took a job out there working with the city of Denver, thinking I might be out there for a year or two. And I was assigned to work on the Platte River, kind of based on my experience in Buffalo. And 30 years later, I'm there with wife and kids and permanently a Denver resident.
There you go. Well, the Platte River project about, well, we'll say 30 years ago, how did that start out? How big was it? How did that sort of come about? We don't have to have a full history, but just sort of give us some basics about that.
Really what kicked it off, and a lot of things start this way, was a disastrous series of floods that just basically wiped out a lot of the landscape along the river. The river had long been abused, neglected, forgotten, impacted with junkyards and kind of dumping grounds, and just really was sort of a no man's land. And the floods came in and drew people's attention to it, and the response was initially to do kind of a major redevelopment project, a $500 million redevelopment project. There's a big master plan done, and basically nothing happened. And then there was some leadership in the community, a guy named Joe Shoemaker, who was a state politician, and Mayor McNichols at the time, a Republican and a Democrat, interestingly enough, got together, formed a coalition, and said, let's turn this river around, except let's just start with small practical steps. And so the first step was to begin to make the river a people place again by building walkways along the river and cleaning up the river so people could get down there. And that really gave birth to the notion of the Greenway Corridor.
And about how many, how long was the extent of those walkways?
Well, initially, it was a pilot project, and there were 4 1-mile walkways that were put in, and then those were strung together into a 10-mile corridor that went from city line to city line and began to unify the entire river corridor.
And we're going to hold on where that is today. It might be fun to compare where it is today compared to where it started out. But let's kind of fast forward for a moment and look at trails today, and then we're going to talk about how communities can begin to really think about this if they are thinking, and a lot of people are. So what are some of the current projects you're looking at, just to show people sort of where this has come in 30 years?
Well, I think, as Roger pointed out, trails and greenways have emerged into really a worldwide movement, and one exciting current project I'm working on right now is a trail and open space project for the city of Las Vegas. Here's a city that's evolving that was kind of a one-industry town. Everybody knows what the industry is there. That was really a small town that's now growing into a major metropolis. And one of the rites of initiation that they've taken on is to preserve the open spaces that remain, particularly the beautiful mountain backdrops around the city, and to create a network of trails. We're calling that the Vias Verde Project. To try and create a loop system that goes all around the city, and then connections that would take you from neighborhoods out to the edges of town, and to kind of reclaim that sort of sense of the Wild West that's there. And we're getting a really enthusiastic response in Las Vegas. So that's one kind of leading edge project. I'm working on that with my colleague Chuck Flink, and that might be a good example. Another example I'll throw out too is something we're calling the Grand Canyon Greenway, which is a trail system, a multi-use trail that would allow park users who visit the canyon to access the rim of the canyon on bike and by foot along a 70-mile network of trails and greenways as an alternative to, you know, kind of driving your car up to the edge of the canyon, stepping out and taking a picture and driving away. This gets people engaged in the experience.
What a great idea. Now, would there be bikes available that people could rent?
That's the idea, that there would be bikes available. We've talked about that, and shuttle buses that then would, you know, if you ride out away and maybe you need a lift back, if you get tired, you throw the bike on the shuttle bus and it takes you back.
You know, one of the major arenas of trail development, and Roger hinted at this, I actually discussed it a bit, and that is the fact that in new community developments, these are becoming very desirable. Why don't you, let's talk about that.
Well, it's interesting. You know, 10, 15 years ago, a lot of times it was kind of an adversarial relationship when we'd be trying to build a trail or a greenway, and we'd go talk to a developer, and there really wasn't much interest. And then surprisingly, that began to change. There's a few leading-edge developers who began to incorporate open spaces and trails. A place I live called Kinkell Ranch in Denver has 6,000 acres of open space and literally miles and miles and miles of trails that the developer put in. And a few years back, I got a call from a group. It was actually the Arnold Palmer Group, one of the representatives who is actually now on our board right now, asking if I would come out and speak to developers about the topic was going beyond golf trails and talking about how developers can add amenities like trails and greenways, and that they are actually, the surveys were showing that they were actually more popular and more in demand and really becoming a must-have for new home buyers. And the room was literally packed with developers, 150 people in the room who wanted to know, how do we add these amenities? So there's been really a total reversal and a total change where these are now viewed as must-have amenities, as Roger was alluding to earlier, that people in communities want these readily accessible facilities.
It's so great to hear that news, and it's something that makes absolutely perfect sense to almost everybody. But I want to make a point, too, and that is the fact that, and these large trails and developments are extraordinary examples of how America is embracing this concept. But let's also talk about a community that perhaps is small, that is thinking about a trail. Maybe they don't have them, they haven't designated them. Let's help those communities understand how they might go about actually creating a trail.
Yeah, there's been a number of successes in smaller communities. People like Ann Lusk, who developed a trail in Stowe, Vermont. I have occasion to work with a number of smaller communities also. Sometimes it's a ski resort community that wants to have a year-round attraction, or sometimes it's just a small town like Trinidad, Colorado, where I did some work along the riverfront. And basically, it's the same process. An important thing is to first start with a vision, and a lot of times there are people in the community who come up with that idea. Sometimes it's helpful to have a community forum or community workshop where people in the community get together, and maybe we get out the markers and some maps, and we put together ideas. Maybe there's a piece of river frontage or a favorite area in the community that people like to use, and to begin to lay in that image and then to graphically represent it so people can embrace it. And then small communities can organize leadership to champion the project. There are grants that can be found, federal grants as well as local funds. Sometimes there are philanthropic monies that can be found. And it's really up to the resourcefulness of the leaders that pull this off. One of our board members, in fact, Terry Whaley, has been very successful doing this with the Ozarks Greenway effort in Springfield, Missouri, where he's been able to pull together resources. But the long and the short of it is that I think any community that has the will can do it. Volunteers can go out. You can go find maybe a grader somewhere that somebody has, or the county roads people can help. We've built trails using volunteers that come in and lay down crushed granite for a surface. So it's really up to the resourcefulness of each community, and more important, I think, the vision and the will to do it.
So if a community were interested, they can actually just start out with volunteer groups. Doesn't take a lot of money to get started. At some point, there has to be a serious commitment and some funding, and as you say, there's places to look for that.
Yeah.
Where can they go for help to get them really started and moving forward?
I'm going to send you to the American Trails website. As I think Roger and Pam pointed out, there's a great library of information there. And that's a terrific source where I think you can go, www.americantrails.org, all one word. The Rails to Trails Conservancy also has resources, and they have a website as well. I believe it's rtc.org, if I'm not mistaken. And also, you can sometimes just put in your browser greenways and trails, and it will take you to some of these case studies and examples. The International Mountain Bike Association, IMBA, they're based out of Boulder, Colorado, another great resource. And then there's the Waterfront Center. And I'm sure, knowing all the listeners are computer literate, they can put those keywords in their browser and find some of those resources and examples. Also, National Geographic, now this was about a decade back, ran a story on the Greenway and Trail movement. That's another possible source. And there are books and other publications that are around that can be helpful, too.
It's important, I think, for people who are interested in creating trails to realize these things take time.
Yes.
Give us an overview of what they should look for in terms of the timing from the time they start until something really begins to cook.
Yes, and this is important, I think, is to understand that it does take time. And it might take a year or two in the planning process to begin to put an idea together and begin to build the leadership behind it. And then maybe another year to begin to get something on the ground. Now, let me also add, I think it's important to try and get things on the ground fairly expeditiously, even if it's a phase, you know, not the whole thing, but a phase, so that people can see concrete evidence of what it is that you're envisioning. And then the strategy we always use is then year by year keep adding to it. And it might take, the Denver system is still growing and it's 30 years later, so it's kind of like getting a snowball rolling. And then it may take a decade or two or longer to build the whole system. But if the vision is there and there's persistence and perseverance, I think that it can be accomplished, and certainly there's lots of examples of where that's happened.
So really the message is, particularly as land prices keep going up and land becomes scarcer, that if anyone is thinking about doing a trail, it's a good time to get started right now.
That's a good point. And you know, you kind of raise another point, too, that a first priority is to try and secure those rights of way, because that's probably the most difficult and time-consuming process. And you're absolutely right. If you see an area that's in the process of developing, having that plan in place first so those rights of way can be secured and dedicated while they're still affordable is important. And that's something really you can't wait 30 years to do. That's kind of an upfront task in this kind of effort.
You know, Bob, you have your own company. I certainly would like to encourage people to contact you personally. You want to give us some information?
Sure. My company is called the Greenway Team, and you can reach us at www.greenwayteam.com. And that has some information about us and has ways to get in touch with us, and also some samples of some trail plans that folks can download and take a look at to get some ideas about the planning process.
This is a guy who's done a lot of really terrific stuff. We've got less than a minute left. Why don't you talk about some of the most interesting things you see in the future for trails?
Well, I think there's some very interesting trends coming. One of the important ones is multi-objectivism, is what I like to call it. We've really seen an evolution of trails coming from just being, you know, a pathway to a whole green corridor, and looking at it as urban infrastructure. So we're not only thinking about the trail, but we're thinking about preserving river and stream corridors, which also happen to very nicely carry floodwater as well, wetlands, wildlife habitat. So we're beginning to see multi-objective kinds of benefits as a very important reward that comes from this. The other thing I see is...
No, Bob, we're actually, that's our little theme song, and that means we're just about out of time. Let's continue this again sometime soon.
Great, Sydney.
Thanks so much, Bob Searns, Vice Chair of American Trails and founder of thegreenwayteam.com.
Thanks.
When we return, we're moving off to talk more about pathways to adventure.